Hi, this is the voice, Michael Schiavello. You're listening to the Premium Oddscast, hosted by leading MMA odds maker Nick Kalikas, fight scientist and author of Fightnomics, Reid Kuhn, and MMA journalist Brian Heminger. The absolute best UFC betting info, picks, statistics, and analysis from the most respected authority in mixed martial arts betting, MMAoddsbreaker.com.
Welcome to the Premium Oddscast presented by BetDSI. I'm Brian Heminger, joined today by leading mixed martial arts oddsmaker Nick Kalikas to break down this Saturday's UFC 232 event, which takes place in Los Angeles, California. If you're unfamiliar with our format, Nick and I will break down the fight card from top to bottom, providing extensive analysis and a pick for each fight after doing our film study for the event. Looking back at our last event, Kyle Marley lost one unit for UFC on Fox 31 with his one-unit free bet on Sergio Pettis at plus 137 odds. Kyle has his free bets and fantasy MMA picks available now on MMAoddsbreaker.com. Back to the present, UFC 232 features a 13-fight card in total and will be aired on UFC Fight Pass, Fox Sports 1, and pay-per-view this Saturday night. Let's dive right in. Now, kicking things off in the bantamweight division, we have Brian Kelleher, who is 19-9, taking on Montel Jackson, who is 6-1. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Opening betting odds, Montel Jackson minus 150, Brian Kelleher plus 110. Right now, looking over our sponsored sportsbook, betdsi.eu. Current odds over at BetDSI have Montel Jackson minus 155, the comeback on Kelleher at plus 125. So line margins have tightened up a little bit. There is two-way action coming into this fight. This fight was rebooked from UFC 230, I believe. Kelleher did end up getting an illness and had to pull out of that fight. Unfortunately for Jackson, it didn't take place, but it did get rebooked and now we're seeing it on UFC 232. And I was very much looking forward to this card or to this fight, I should say, on the UFC 230 card, but I'm glad it got rebooked because it should be an exciting fight. I mean, both these guys are two high level bantamweights that really bring it. They have a lot of skill and matchup wise, it should be pretty fun and exciting. I mean, there's no way this fight's a letdown as far as activity level, as far as what we're going to see. I mean, because both these guys are so well-rounded and have the ability to finish fights on the feet, on the ground as well. So this should be exciting. I favor Montel Jackson, obviously, in this spot. I think he does have athleticism, the reach advantage here. I think he has a big striking edge on the feet. And Kelleher, although he is well-rounded, and you cannot take the guy lightly on the feet. I mean, he does have some power. But he in this spot here, I think he's going to eat a lot of punishment on the feet. I think Jackson in space is going to tear him up. So Kelleher is going to have to close the distance and try to work the ground game where he is going to have a little bit of advantage, especially in the submission aspect of things. But I think Jackson's wrestling is going to be able to kind of neutralize what Keller has to offer as far as the takedown game goes. And he's going to be able to keep it upright and he's going to be delivering those knees in the clinch. He's going to be delivering, like I said, on the outside. He's going to keep his space and just kind of pick Keller apart. Keller is going to get beat up. I think he's going to get busted up in his fight and eventually possibly even finished. If it hits the scorecards though, I think it's going to be clear. Competitive but clear for Montel Jackson as far as the W goes, even on the scorecard. So I think he just has more ways to win this fight, and I just think stylistically it's a bad matchup for Kelleher. With that said, I do expect, like I said, some fireworks at times. I know Kelleher is going to definitely have his moments in his fight. He's just a warrior. He's a fun guy to watch fight, and I think he is one of the better bantamweights on the roster right now. So this is a big test for Montel Jackson. I mean, he needs it, definitely, because, coming into his UFC debut, he had some hype, and he lost that fight to Simone. And he got out-grinded and out-wrestled in that fight. I mean, out-controlled in that fight. So Kelleher's going to try to follow that same blueprint. I just don't think he's going to have the same level of success. And I think Jackson's going to find his way to the W here. So I am going to pick Montel Jackson. As far as the betting line goes, honestly, I think it's still a little low. So there might be some value left on Montel Jackson here at this spot. So you might want to, take a stab or look his way a little bit. So the pick for me is Montel Jackson, and there could very well be some value left on Jackson as well, minus 155.
I'm going to side with Montel Jackson as well. Jackson is just the bigger, longer, better striker, more power, and he's an excellent athlete, coming with a bit of a wrestling background. Now, obviously, that didn't work out for him in his UFC debut, but I think Simone is just a much better ground fighter, and especially getting the fight to the ground, than Brian Kelleher. I mean, Kelleher, if you don't give him a reason to go to the ground, I mean, he'll stand and bang with people. I mean, he did that a lot in the fight against Barao. I think Kelleher will actually be looking to take the fight to Jackson a little bit on the feet. And I think that that's going to be to his detriment because, I mean, Jackson has 11 inches in reach on him, which is just absolutely insane. So, you know, in this fight, Jackson is just absolutely going to have a massive advantage in the feet. I mean, just being the better striker already and then having the physical advantages that he has here, if he loses this fight, it is entirely his fault that his takedown defense wasn't up to snuff, because realistically, the only way that this fight does not go Jackson's way is that he gets put on his back and gets submitted, or gets put on his back for at least 2 out of 3 rounds. You know, I was kind of thinking Kelleher, being the veteran, could pull it off the first time these guys fought, but that was with Jackson stepping in on short notice. Now with a full training camp, with, you know, even more time to continue honing his skills, I think, you know, this is definitely Jackson's fight to lose. With everything going his way, there's really no more intangibles in Kelleher's favor other than the fact that he's just fought in the UFC for a longer period of time, and I just don't think that's enough. So I think Montel Jackson at worst outpoints Kelleher and at best knocks him out. So my pick is going to be Jackson. Now moving up to the welterweight division, we have Curtis Millender, who is 16-3, taking on Sayar Bahadurzadeh, who is 23-6-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Millender opened -215, the comeback on Bahadurzadeh at +170. And right now you're seeing over at BetDSI, -145 for Millender. The comeback on Bahadurzadeh is at +115. So needless to say, more action coming in Sire's way. I'm not surprised. I think the opener was set a little bit too high. No, not enough respect on Sayar Bahadurzadeh in this spot. I mean, the guy is a beast. He's finally on a bit of a win streak in the UFC. I mean, coming in on 3 straight wins. I know he's kind of been inconsistent. He's had some injuries. He's had some time off in between. You'd like to see him in there a little bit more, but, moving back, you know, to where he belongs, I think in the welterweight division is a nice, breath of fresh air, because he's the type of fighter that it doesn't matter the weight class, man. He'll fight anywhere. He's just a true warrior fighter, and he has success. I mean, in heavier weight classes, obviously in the past as well. So, Bahadurzadeh is just, like I said, a beast. He has a ton of power on the feet. He's got that killer instinct. He's got some good wrestling. He's got some solid takedown defense. I mean, in the past, what's hindered him has definitely been wrestlers or better ground fighters been able to control him and keep him down a little bit. And you know, been able to kind of outpoint him in that aspect of things. But outside of that, man, if you can't control him, you're in some serious trouble. Now, Millender, of course, a well-rounded fighter. He's got a lot of good things going for him as well. He's got some size. He's got some reach, athleticism. He's definitely improving. You know, fight by fight, you've seen his progression. And, you know, once he's come into the UFC, he's rattled off 2 solid wins, impressive wins over solid competition, so far as well. So this should be a doozy. I mean, this should be a great fight. I think both these guys are going to be capable of maybe landing a takedown along the way. And both these guys are obviously going to have success on the feet as well. For Sayar, I think defensively, he eats a lot of punishment. I mean, he's a type of fighter that's so tough that he can absorb some of it. But against Millender, you got to be careful. You don't want to eat some of those kicks or some of the unorthodox striking techniques that he has on the feet. So you definitely got to, you know, be cautious and respect Millender's length and his power. But at the same time, Millender has to respect Sayar as well in that regard. So I think this fight plays out all over the place. I think both these guys are dangerous and capable of finishing the fight at any time. I'm actually going to lean towards the underdog. I think the early action was definitely some value there. The opening numbers got pounded, and, you know, obviously people soaked up that plus money. And I still think there might be a little bit of value left on Sayar at this price, because I do think that in this fight, he's the more dangerous threat as far as the knockout goes. Again, if he doesn't need a kick, I think his hands are going to be devastating. And Millender's susceptible, even though he has that length. He's got kind of tall man defense at times as well. And I think Sayar could definitely land and possibly cause some problems there. Or I could see Sayar getting to the ground, getting top position, and then just unloading on the ground as well. So I think that Millender is definitely a very solid fighter, and I think he's got a ton of potential and probably more upside at this point on the UFC roster. But stylistically, I think this is a tough matchup for him, and I think he's just getting a little bit too much respect at this point. So I do like Sayar. I think he's a little bit underrated, and I think he's going to come away with a win here. So I'm going to go with Sayar. I think, again, there might be a little bit of value left on Sayar plus money as well.
Yeah, Sayar Bahadurzadeh just kind of has a way of making things work, whether it's, getting top position and finding submissions or just landing that big power punch. But he might have his hands full here in Millender. Millender is definitely, even though Bahadurzadeh has fought at middleweight in the past in the UFC, Millender is still going to be the bigger guy, the longer guy. Millender has 3 inches in reach. He's 3 inches taller. His legs have 5 inches longer leg reach. So Millender should have the edge at distance, and he does have pretty good use of range, even if he is hittable every once in a while. But as long as this fight stays standing, Millender is going to be in really good shape. But the main thing I'm concerned about is Bahadurzadeh has taken fights to the ground in some of his recent bouts, and when he does get top position, he can be pretty imposing, whether it's with ground and pound, whether it's with submission attempts. And Millender is not very good off of his back. I mean, we've seen that in his fights outside the UFC. We saw it when he got put on his back in his last fight. I mean, you know, he should have been able to just outwork Griffin, and you know, he definitely, you know, had a tough battle in there. So I think Bahadurzadeh, if he does ugly this fight up a little bit, and if he's able to close the distance, I think that he actually will have some success against Millender. But I also think that, you know, Millender is very good at using that distance. And while Bahadurzadeh does have a lot of power, he's also not very fast. He's not particularly athletic. And if Millender can use the distance properly, Bahadurzadeh is not going to be able to get a hold of him easily. He'll be shooting from far away, which should make avoiding takedowns a lot easier for Millender. And I think it'll be a lot more difficult for Bahadurzadeh to land that one big shot that he is capable of landing against people. But with Millender's size and length, I think he can keep Bahadurzadeh at bay enough to outpoint him and win a decision with at least 2 out of 3 rounds without getting finished. So my pick is going to be Millender, but I'm super nervous about Bahadurzadeh closing the distance. Now, moving up to the middleweight division, we have Uriah Hall, who is 13-9, taking on Bevan Lewis, who is 6-0. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Uriah Hall opened the favorite, minus 135, Lewis at plus 105, and right now, looking over at BetDSI, we're seeing minus 125 on Lewis in the comeback at minus 105 the other way on Hall. So line did flip. There is 2-way action coming in this fight as well, but more action coming in Lewis's way. I think that's right as well. I think Lewis should be a favorite in this fight. I mean, obviously Uriah Hall has, I mean, the track record in the UFC, the former Ultimate Fighter finalist. I mean, the guy was hyped up to be the next Anderson Silva. We all know all the history of that. The people that are diehard Ultimate Fighter fans and UFC fans know what I'm talking about. And he's been a bit of a disappointment. I mean, don't take me wrong. Uriah Hall is definitely a talented fighter. You have to respect the guy because on the feet, the guy can throw some thunder. I mean, the guy has really good striking. He's got great kicks, obviously, fancy kicks, spinning kicks. I mean, he's got power with his hands as well. He's more than capable of knocking you out. Also, his wrestling offensively at times could definitely be a threat in most cases. Defensively, he's got decent takedown defense, but he can get outgrounded by really solid wrestlers. We've seen that to be an issue in the past for him as well. But I mean, these days he is a little bit more chinny. He is a bit of a decline fighter. And you know, I think that as the fight progresses at times, I mean, he does tend to slow down a little bit more so as well. So there's a lot of issues right now, I think, with Uriah Hall. He's definitely not in the prime of his career, and he's fighting an up-and-coming fighter, and Lewis, that is definitely, even though, you know, he's not exactly a young buck, I mean, Lewis is definitely an up-and-coming fighter as far as MMA years. He's 27 years old overall, but I mean, he's still young enough in his career that he's getting better. He comes from the Jackson Winklejohn camp, which he's getting great training. We all know the legendary training camp, you know, and partners that he has, all associated with Greg Jackson. So he's been learning for years. I mean, he's kind of been slowly worked up to this point. And obviously he's coming off of a very impressive Dana White Contender Series victory, getting his shot in the UFC against Alton Cunningham with an impressive knockout win there. So, I mean, there's a lot to like about Lewis. And the thing with him is he's not only a dangerous type of striker. I mean, he's good everywhere. He's just a very complete fighter. I think he can outpoint Hall on the feet here. He can pick him apart a little bit. He can do some damage. He can beat him on the feet. I think he can also mix it up and probably take Hall down and have his way with Hall on the ground as well. He's just a very complete fighter. So I think the only way Lewis loses his fight is if he does disrespect Hall, keeps his hands low, and Hall just, you know, lands something big and puts him out. So Hall definitely has a puncher's chance in this spot. But overall, I think it's Lewis's fight to win or lose. I think Lewis will outpoint him and probably finish Hall along the way. So at near pick'em price still, I think the value is on Lewis, honestly. I think, like I said, the early action, getting him at plus money, and then still to this point, I know it's going to be fireworks. Both these guys are definitely guys that are dangerous and capable of finishing fights. But at this point, I think Lewis has the upside. I think he's a fresher, more hungry fighter that, again, is the more complete fighter at this point as well. And I think he's probably going to come away with a win. So I expect him to finish Hall along the way and get an impressive official UFC debut. So the pick and the value, I think, lays on Lewis.
Yeah, with Uriah Hall, you always know that he's capable of doing something insane because he's been in there against some amazing fighters, and he's still the only guy that ever knocked out Gegard Mousasian. Granted, it was a pretty lucky landed a perfectly timed, you know, head kick as Musasi was kind of ducking down right into it. But still, I mean, Uriah Hall has the athleticism, the power, and the finesse to pull off crazy moves and beat people that you never thought that he was capable of beating. So that possibility is always there. So you can never fully count him out of a fight. But I do think that Bevan Lewis is, at this point in his career, just the better fighter than Hall. Lewis is extremely well-rounded, has a good ground game, is strong in the clinch. He's a little bit bigger, stronger, and I think that he's definitely better on the ground as well. So when these guys are matched up, I mean, yeah, Hall is going to have that explosive power. He can throw all kinds of crazy spinning attacks. So Lewis will always have to have his guard up, but as long as Lewis is protecting himself and gives himself the opportunity to get inside and close that distance, I think Lewis can really tear into Hall on the inside with dirty boxing. I think he can beat him up in the clinch. I think he can beat him up if he takes him to the ground, and that's probably the smartest thing to do. Just take away Uriah Hall's weapons, and he is just half the fighter, if less. So, if I'm Bevan Lewis, that's exactly what I do. He comes out of a great camp in Jackson Wink. And this is a guy that's, you know, kind of battle hardened, and he's ready for this UFC debut. I mean, he had two fights on the Contender Series. He fought in LFA, which is one of the best promotions for, top prospects. So, I mean, he's been in there three times now against solid prospects. He's come out victorious each time. He's looked a little bit better each time, especially that last win against, Cunningham. So, I think that this is his moment to shine, and the UFC is giving him this opportunity against an established middleweight for his UFC debut because I think the UFC believes in him. Usually, you know, a fighter making their UFC debut, they kind of work their way up. But, I mean, Uriah Hall is ranked number 14 in the world right now. So, you know, the UFC is definitely giving this guy a chance to make a serious statement in his UFC debut, and I think he does it. So my pick is going to be Bevan Lewis. I think he closes that distance. I think he avoids the crazy, you know, athletic finesse striking that Hall's going to throw his way. And I think he gets the job done probably by TKO at some point. So Bevan Lewis is my pick. Now moving down to the bantamweight division, we have Nathaniel Wood, who is 14-3, taking on Andre Ewell, who is 14-4. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Wood opened minus 210, the comeback on Ewell plus 160. And right now what you're seeing over at BetDSI is Wood minus 125, the comeback on Ewell at minus 105. So line margins have tightened up, more action coming in Ewell's way. In fact, it flipped for a while, and he was actually a slight favorite, I believe. And now it's come back to Wood slightly. So it's a pick'em fight with a slight lean towards Wood. I get it. I understand. I think it is a pick'em type of fight for sure because you have two – very exciting prospects at bantamweight going at it here. I mean, both these guys are former champions in other organizations. Nathaniel Wood, Cage Warriors champions, a former Cage Warriors champion, of course. And I, you know, I mentioned time after time how great the Cage Warriors organization has been, feeding UFC fighters, you know, into the UFC, getting UFC fighters or getting their prospects or fighters into the UFC, I should say. Same thing with CES and LFA fighting and Access TV fights. And that's exactly where Yule came from. He came from CES. So another organization that he was a good solid champion in and, you know, with solid experience as well. So you have two, just like I said, awesome bantamweight prospects that are, you know, coming off of impressive debut wins as well. I mean, if you look at it, both of these guys had to fight adversity in their official UFC debuts. I mean, big time ones, and they both fought very good, solid veteran fighters. When you look at Wood, he had to face Eduardo. He was getting beat up in that fight a little bit. I mean, what you have in Wood is a very solid fighter. He's more of a striker than anything else, though. I mean, he has a ground game. Obviously, proved that. That's how he ended up getting his win over Eduardo. But more so than anything, the guy's a warrior. He likes to stand and bang. He's got good takedown defense, and he's going to beat you up on the feet. That's what you get with Wood. A lot of the same thing could be said about Yule as well. But what I'm saying is Wood is hittable, and obviously Eduardo, a savvy vet, was able to get through and bust him up pretty good in that fight. But Wood has a tough chin. I mean, like I said, he's not going to quit on you. He's got a good gas tank. He's going to keep coming. And in that second round, obviously, Eduardo made a mistake. Wood was able to capitalize on the ground and get the W. So impressive win, but he had to fight through adversity. Same thing with Yule in that first fight against Brown in hostile territory in Brazil. You know, it was a tough fight. I mean, Brown was able to get him in down. He was able to get him in almost submit him in an armbar, really. He mounted him at a time as well. And Yule had to, you know, take some punishment, fight out of a submission attempt, and then, you know, kind of regroup and come out in the second or third round and take over that fight. And he did just that. So that's what I'm saying with these guys. Both these guys have had to fight through adversity against solid competition veterans, and they've, you know, they came through with flying colors. So kind of take your hat off to them. And then this matchup against each other, it's very interesting. Yule's going to be the more athletic, I think the taller, lankier fighter, obviously. He's a southpaw. So he's going to present a lot of problems with Wood, especially from the outside as he eats that punishment. I think Yule, he doesn't have the striking. I think Wood is actually the more technical and a little bit the better striker of the two. But Yule's a little bit more unorthodox. And I think obviously with that length, he could definitely cause some damage as well. So even though Wood is the better fighter, I think Yule's still going to have success on the feet, just as much, if not more so. I mean, utilizing that length and utilizing that reach, that he has. So I expect this to be fireworks. I mean, both these guys should neutralize each other on the ground. I think both of their takedown defense is probably good enough to keep this fight upright. So we'll see some fireworks. So we'll see these guys stand and bang. And I think that we'll see a firefight and it'll go back and forth. And I'm leaning towards Yule a little bit more because Wood is – his defense, I think, is a little bit worse. Now, that said, Yule, if you look at his fights, I mean, he does keep his hands low at times. And Wood has plenty of knockout power. So I wouldn't be shocked if Wood gets through and lands something. In fact, I think that's probably the way – if this fight hits the ground, I think it's one of these guys clipping each other and the other one gets dropped. And that's how it gets there. But, you know, through attempts, maybe we see some attempts. But I think these guys will kind of, like I said, sprawl and brawl and be able to kind of negate any – serious takedown threat from the other person. So this should be fireworks. Should be a big fight for the winner. He's going to take a big stride forward in the bantamweight division. I'm going to actually lean towards Yule a little bit. Not a confident pick because, like I said, I think this fight could realistically go either way. But I like Yule's size here, and I like, you know, his overall athleticism. I think he's going to be able to keep this fight upright and probably do enough damage along the way to outpoint Wood in what should be a very, very close competitive decision, I think. So hopefully it's fireworks. I'm looking forward to this fight a lot, and I'm going to slightly lean towards Yule as a pick.
Yeah, the main thing here is both fighters had impressive UFC debuts, picking up quality wins against established UFC veterans, but Nathaniel Wood had a lot more trouble against Eduardo. I mean, he was actually getting lit up on the feet against Eduardo, and then Eduardo stupidly, you know, the guy is an incredibly talented striker with a history of getting beat on the ground, and Eduardo shoots in for a takedown and immediately gets submitted. So I don't understand that whatsoever in a fight he was winning. But that's what happened. So that's really how Wood got that first UFC win. And that is a bit of a concern for me because, you know, now he's facing a guy in Yule that's actually taller and longer and about as good of a striker as Eduardo, if not better. So, definitely younger and a little quicker. So I think Wood's going to have his hands full in that department. The main thing that Wood will have going for him is I do think Wood is clearly better on the ground, and if he can get this fight to the floor, he'll be in relatively good shape. But will he be able to get it to the floor? The other thing is, Ewell, while he is extremely tall and long for the bantamweight division, he is a bit hittable. So, you know, Wood does push a high pace, and he does have some power, and maybe Ewell gets a little predictable with his attack, and he does eat some shots along the way. The other thing you got to factor in is Ewell is stepping in on short notice for Tom Duquesnoy. And Duquesnoy against Wood would have been an absolute barn burner of a fight. But, you know, now we have, obviously, Ewell stepping in, and that still is a very, very intriguing fight. And the thing is, it's not like this is super short notice. He's stepping in. Duquesnoy dropped out in early November. So, I mean, these basically full training camp against full training camp. So I'm not too worried about that. But it is something that at least you have to consider. But overall, I think in terms of striking, Ewell is the better striker. Plus, he's got massive physical advantages. So as long as this fight stays standing, I think Ewell's going to be in pretty good shape. It kind of reminds me of the Kelleher fight from earlier on the card, or you know, the Milliner fight. So just the taller, longer guy that's the better striker, if he is able to utilize those advantages properly, he should be able to win the fight. So I think that Andre Ewell will be able to use those advantages, and I am going to pick him to win the fight. Now, moving on to the Fox Sports 1 preliminary card in the lightweight division, we have BJ Penn, who is 16-12-2, taking on Ryan Hall, who is 6-1. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Hall open -290, the comeback on Penn +230, and right now what you're seeing over at BetDSI is -480 for Hall, the comeback on BJ Penn at +330. So needless to say, everybody fading BJ Penn, as we've seen as of late. I mean, it's just no faith from the bettors out there, from the MMA community, BJ Penn these days. And the UFC's been trying to throw the guy a bone. I mean, they're trying to get him a win. They're trying to keep him relevant. You know, with the Seaver fight recently, I mean, they really thought they had something going, because obviously Seaver's a declined fighter in his own right. So, and obviously BJ Penn, if, for those of you guys that don't know who he is, I mean, the newbies out there, shame on you. You have to look him up. I mean, BJ Penn, in my opinion, will always go down as one of the best fighters ever in the history of the sport. I mean, the guy in his prime was so unique. I mean, just amazing. He had it all. I mean, great striking, great takedown defense. And then obviously the jiu-jitsu, just world-class jiu-jitsu skills. So he was like he was just the most complete fighter of his time. I mean, even up in weight classes, it didn't matter the weight class for him. I mean, he had success everywhere, man. The guy was just a special talent. And it's a shame for, I mean, him to be at this point where he's almost a 500 type of fighter right now, because obviously he's fighting way past the point that he should. And it's sad to see it, because I think he's just diminishing his legacy, honestly, more than anything else. And it shouldn't be that way. So, I mean, some of these fighters just stick around way too long, as we all know. I mean, when boxing and in the UFC, and it's sad because they're just not the same type of fighters. And that's why you're seeing him such a big dog here. I mean, stylistically, this should be a winnable fight for BJ Penn, and another spot where the UFC is trying to get him a matchup that's okay for him. I mean, Hall is the type of fighter that, obviously, world-class jiu-jitsu practitioner. I mean, ultimate fighter winner. So the guy has become a decent mixed martial artist, but his striking is definitely still a work in progress. I think Hall is improving. His kicking game is definitely something to watch out for, and you have to respect. I mean, you can ask, obviously, Gray Maynard, I mean, that aspect of things. He was so frustrated in his fight with Hall, beyond belief. But, you know, Hall fought very smart and got the W. So he's capable of working in his kicks, doing some unorthodox things to get the fight to the ground as well, and winning fights. I mean, it's, you know, he doesn't have to heavily lean on his submissions to get the W's here. So he can kind of control the fights, as he's proven, obviously, in his fight with Lobov as well. So there's many ways Hall can be a thorn in a fight and accomplish what he needs to do here. And I think, obviously, you're seeing him as such a big favorite because, again, people are fading BJ Penn. They think that Hall will be the superior fighter, and this fight gets to the ground, Hall's going to be able to dominate. And I think at this point, obviously, Hall is the smoother practitioner, obviously, on the ground. I mean, he's going to have the edge. He's definitely got more I think more left in the tank at this point. I mean, you know, but world-class jiu-jitsu skill from Penn, I would be surprised if Hall actually finishes him on the ground and submits him on the ground. So I think if Penn can keep this fight upright and kind of keep things in space and utilize his striking advantage, I mean, he does have some good boxing still. He at least got to see some of it in his fight, flashes at least. I mean, you know, in his last fight as well. So I think if Penn can have some success on the feet and not wear himself out to the point where he's just totally exhausted as the fight progresses, because let's face it, I mean, he was in that last fight as well against Seaver, but that third round, he basically quit. He didn't want it. I mean, he just didn't have it. He was exhausted. And you know, obviously Seaver wanted it more. So if it comes down to the third round, it's a close fight. Hall's going to win it. There's no doubt, because BJ Penn, it's just, you know, like I said, he's to that point in his career where he just, his cardio lets him down. He's just a shell of himself, unfortunately. But out of all the fights that he's had, this is definitely a spot that's weird in a way that he can win it. I mean, he could possibly pull off this upset. So all depends on how Hall fights. All depends on how, you know, what condition and what game plan Penn has coming into this fight. But with all that said, I'm still not going to pick Penn. I think that as far as the odds go, the opening line was actually better than where the line is right now because of the stylistic matchup. But I'm still going to pick Hall to win this fight. I wouldn't bet it. I wouldn't put him in a parlay. I would stay away from it completely. I mean, it's a BJ Penn situation or pass. And so I think personally there is some value in BJ Penn, but I get it. I understand if you guys want to stay away from it. You know, it's BJ Penn that's fighting way past his prime. So I get it. But the pick for me has to be Ryan Hall in this spot. We'll see how it plays out. I don't know. Like I said, this is kind of a head scratcher to me. I know the UFC is trying their best to give BJ Penn a winnable fight, but I don't know if he's still going to get it done against Hall. So the pick is Hall. Just hard for me to pick a decline BJ Penn at this point in 2018.
Yeah, that's the main thing here. I mean, in BJ Penn's prime, he would have eaten Ryan Hall for a lunch. But, I mean, he's just not in his prime anymore. He's not even close to his prime. I mean, he hasn't won a fight in 8 years. and he's looked worse and worse. I mean, even in the Seaver fight where he started strong, he just gassed out. So, you know, against Ryan Hall, at least he's in there against somebody that's not going to knock him out. So, I mean, you've got that going for him. Hall can press forward aggressively on the feet without any fear of, you know, eating a counter strike, but he does have to worry about being taken down. And that's something you wouldn't really worry about because BJ Penn had one of the greatest ground games of all time, but he also gets tired in fights. I mean, that has just been historically his biggest weakness has been conditioning. And I expect BJ Penn to start strong in this fight. I think he'll be landing on the feet. But I think at some point he's going to get tired. And then Ryan Hall's going to take him down. And Ryan Hall will just be in top position and out grappling a tired BJ Penn over the course of the fight. The real thing is BJ Penn going to be able to win the first two rounds before he gasses? And I just don't think he will. I mean, you got to go back and you look. A lot of his fights, he actually was starting strong and then he gassed. I mean, he started strong against Seaver, then he gassed. He started strong against John Fitch, then he gassed. He started strong. He actually won the first round of that fight against Nick Diaz. And people always remember that fight because of the just complete ass kicking that BJ Penn took in rounds 2 and 3, but he actually won the first round. So, you know, he can win the first round here, and he might be able to win the second because Ryan Hall is just not really a threat whatsoever on the feet. So that's really what's keeping me back from saying that Ryan Hall wins this fight 100% of the time. And that's just because Hall is just so anti-threat on the feet. And it just boils down to, can Hall take this to the floor? You know, BJ Penn used to be known for, you know, his absolute insane takedown defense, but that's really not, you know, anything anymore either. You know, he doesn't just have that athleticism to avoid the takedown, I don't think. So, I can see Ryan Hall just kind of flying in with some crazy dive at his legs and then, flopping to his back into 50-50 guard and then eventually just transitioning into something, and getting top position and winning the fight. I don't know if he'll be able to finish BJ Penn because, you know, BJ Penn still does have, good defense on the ground, at least against submissions. He takes a lot of punishment on the ground at times, but at least he avoids submissions and that is Hall's strength. And I don't think Hall submits Penn, but I do think he outgrapples him. So it's just going to have to, what really this fight boils down to is Will BJ Penn be able to outstrike Hall enough before Hall gets his grappling going? And I don't think he will. So I'm going to side with Ryan Hall as well. Now, dropping down to the bantamweight division, we have Douglas Silva de Andrade, who is 25-2 with one no contest, taking on Peter Yan, who is 10-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Yan opened -250, the comeback on Andrade +190. And right now what you're seeing over at BetDSI is Yan at -305, the comeback +235 on Andrade. So line margins have tightened up, a little bit more action coming in. Obviously on Yan, I'm not really that surprised by it as well. I mean, the guy has, since he's made his UFC debut, the guys have just a ton of hype around him, and rightfully so. I mean, if you watch his fights, the guy is such a well-rounded spark plug of a fighter. I mean, he's dangerous everywhere the fight takes place. He's got good ground defense. He's got capable ground offensively. He's got power in his hands. He's got good striking. He's got a good pace that he pushes as well. Tough as nails. He'll outpoint you. Like I said, he's got capabilities of finishing you. I mean, a lot of good things you can say about him. So I understand the hype, but he's had some battles. I mean, you know, some of these matchups for him haven't been easy. I mean, even in that last fight, he definitely got tested by Sun. And now he's going to get another test here with Douglas Silva de Andrade. I think this is a excellent fight, excellent matchup. I think it's going to be very competitive. Andrade is not somebody you want to take lightly. I mean, he's coming off of a pretty solid win over Vera. And in the UFC so far, he's had some mixed results, but I think overall he's probably a bit underrated. I mean, he's a very complete fighter. You can't underestimate him on the feet. He definitely has some ground game to go along with it as well. So I think he's going to be game. I mean, it's going to be a competitive fight, but I think Yan's just going to be a step ahead. Yan's going to be the one that pushes the pace a little bit more. I think he's going to be the one probably landing the more effective strikes throughout the fight and will win on the scorecards. I don't see a finish here. I think both these guys are tough enough to be able to withstand what the other person throws at him. So I do expect a 29-28 type of competitive decision, or maybe even a 30-27 decision for Yan, but a close 30-27 type of decision. So a competitive fight. I do like Yan in this spot, and I think he does edge out Andrade. But this will be one of the better fights on the card because I think, again, it's probably flying under the radar, and you definitely have two solid bantamweights that are well-rounded that are going to come and bring it. So looking forward to this one as well. I mean, this is from top to bottom. This is a great fight card. Looking forward to it. I mean, it should be a fun night. So the pick is Yan to keep his momentum going and get another solid win over a very game Douglas Silva de Andrade.
I'll be the first to admit that I underestimated Douglas Silva de Andrade when he made his UFC debut at featherweight against Tukhugov. I kind of just put him on the back burner as just another guy, but he actually has loosened up his striking a lot. His conditioning issues have kind of been corrected. He pushes a really good pace. He mixes things up well, and he just goes hard for 15 straight minutes, and he is a definite threat against a lot of people. Now, that being said, Peter Yan is, in my opinion, one of the best prospects in the bantamweight division. I don't know if he'll ever be a champion someday, but I do think that he can at least be a top contender in 135 pounds. I actually think he should be a top 15 right now, even though he's not quite ranked there yet. This is a very, very intriguing battle because we're going to get to see just what Yan is made of. You know, Yan's been in there against a couple pretty good fighters, but, Douglas Silva de Andrade is going to give him a test. I mean, this is a guy that has pretty good chin. He has, pretty good, pace, good power, mixes it up. You know, Yan is going to, be tested on the feet. And, you know, we're going to see if he can hang against a top striker. And we're also going to see, you know, maybe Yan uses some of his ground game in wrestling as well, because that's actually how Andrade ended up losing against Rob Font. Got submitted. So maybe Yan does use some of the rest of his game. We really have only seen the striking for the most part so far. And so far that's been great because Yan is a beast on the feet. But I want to see a little bit of everything to really see just what this guy is capable of and if he actually is a potential future champion in this division. So this is going to be a great test for Yan. I do think that Yan is able to mix it up enough to get the job done. I'm a big believer in his power, in his technique. He did, you know, have a bit of a firefight in that last one. So I think Entourage will get his licks in, but I do think in the end of the day, Peter Yan will be the one that is victorious, having done enough to win a decision at least, if not getting a stoppage. I mean, I really do think Yan is good enough that he can stop just about anybody. So we're going to see just if the hype is for real here, and I think that Yan does pass this test. So Yan is going to be my pick. Now, moving up to the women's featherweight division, we have Kat Zingano, who is 10-3, taking on Megan Anderson, who is 8-3. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Zingano opened -140, the comeback on Anderson around +110. And right now, looking over at BetDSI, it is currently -150. For Zingano, the comeback in Anderson at +120. So again, line margins have tightened up a little bit. Two action coming into this fight as well. Interesting. I mean, this is definitely a spot where I think the public should be split overall. I mean, Anderson coming from Invicta, getting her shot, obviously against Holly Holm. And a lot of hype was coming into, you know, her UFC debut, even against a solid fighter like Holm, obviously. A lot of respect out there for Anderson. And deservingly so. I mean, Anderson is a huge, huge girl for the weight class, 145 pounds. Let's start off by saying this is a featherweight fight. So Zingano is moving up to featherweight. And Anderson, like I said, she's a big girl at 145, and she has some power. She's got some good striking. She definitely has some skill and some finishing ability on the feet, and she's just tough to deal with. But Holly Holm was able to obviously neutralize her a little bit, getting her to the ground, controlling her on the ground as well, kind of outsmarting her, kind of outpointing her. That's the thing with Megan Anderson here in this spot. I think that she's still raw. She's still developing her game. She's definitely getting better. She's getting more experience. Training with James Krause and crew over at Glory has been awesome for her. I mean, you could just definitely tell she's getting better. But at the same time, she's not quite up to par, in my opinion, with the Holly Holmes, with the Kat Zinganos. I mean, as far as what they've accomplished, who they've matched up with throughout their careers as well, and the experience that they've had. So this is a case where Zingano, I think, in my opinion, even in her losses, has actually proved more to me recently than ever, honestly. I mean, she's gotten better. I thought Zingano was going to be at that point where, you know, she was a decline fighter, basically, that she would start suffering some defeats and just kind of it would steamroll into her eventually getting cut from the roster or, you know, her going back to Invicta or whatnot. But even in some of those losses, she showed me a ton of heart. I mean, I faded her in a couple of fights where obviously, you know, I won some money against her. But at the same time, in her last fight, she got the W over Renault, and I think Brian was on her as well. I was on her. Brian was on her. I think we picked it right because I think she turned the corner in that Vieira fight, even though she lost to Vieira, which I think Vieira is one of the best fighters, obviously, in the weight class, in the bantamweight weight class. And I mean, she's proven that already. She's definitely a contender. But Zingano in that fight really showed a lot. I think she showed toughness. She showed heart. She showed the ability to fight through adversity and make it a competitive fight against, I think, high level competition. So in my opinion, Zingano's gotten better in her cardio. She's gotten a little bit tougher and she's gotten a little bit mentally focused where she should be. Cause obviously she's had some personal issues in her life. You know, she's had some family, you know, obviously with her husband dying, a lot of stuff that you had to battle through. That's not easy for you, being a high level skilled athlete like she is. So I wasn't sure if that was going to hinder her and just kind of basically ruin her career. But I mean, she's fought through it. She's toughed it out and she's at the point where she is right now, where I think she's going to get a solid win over Anderson. And a lot of that's going to be her ground game. I mean, I think she's got underrated wrestling. She's going to be able to utilize that in this fight. I mean, Anderson's weakness is definitely her ground game. Zingano's strength, I think, is her ground game, getting the fight to the ground and utilizing her ground and pound, utilizing her submission skill on the ground as well. I mean, she's definitely going to have a huge edge over Anderson on the ground in this spot, and that's what she wants to do. Now, if this fight stays upright and it stays standing, obviously Anderson has a big edge, because I think even though Zingano's a capable fighter, Anderson's going to hurt her on the feet. I think Anderson in the clinch, Anderson in space will beat her up as well. So I think that's not a good look. Zingano's a tough chick. She can absorb a lot of punishment, but you know, with facing the bigger opponent like Anderson, that's not where she wants to be. She wants to get this fight to the ground. So basically this fight comes down to, can Anderson keep it upright? If she does, she probably gets a win over Zingano. Or will Zingano get the fight to the ground and utilize her ground game and get the W that way, whether it's on the scorecards or possibly finish along the way? I lean a little bit more towards Zingano. I think Zingano's ground game is to the point where it is going to be a little bit too much. I know Anderson's preparing for this. She knows probably what the situation is. She knows Zingano's going to look at Holly Holm and how, you know, she was able to win that fight and kind of duplicate that blueprint. I still don't think Anderson's going to have success defending it though. I think Zingano's going to be able to get her down enough times, and it might only take one, you know, solid takedown pass to, you know, to full mount, start dropping some bombs, you know, open up a submission or something like that, and Zingano takes advantage and gets a W here. So I do like Zingano. I think she can outpoint her and just grind her out enough that she gets a win on the scorecards or possibly finish her along the way. So Zingano's path to victory is on the ground, and I think she utilizes that to get the W. So even at this price, I do think there's some value left on Zingano as well. So it's a bet and a pick on Zingano at this price for me.
Yeah, and I'm going to go with Zingano as well. Megan Anderson clearly is one of the biggest, strongest featherweights out there. I mean, there is no way in hell she could ever fight at 135 pounds. While, you know, Kat Zingano, she not only could fight at 135, you know, I've heard that she might even be able to fight at 125. So she is going to be at a major size disadvantage here. But you have to factor in that Megan Anderson just does not have a good ground game, and she doesn't have good takedown defense. I mean, Holly Holm, who is known for her kickboxing and boxing history, repeatedly took Megan Anderson down when they fought. Even though Holm had probably the technical striking edge, why risk it? She knew that she could take Megan Anderson down, and she did. So Kat Zingano actually comes from a strong wrestling background. She's utilized wrestling in her most recent fights, and I think that if she's smart here, she stands with Megan Anderson for about 30 seconds this entire fight combined. I mean, if she wants to win this fight, she just needs to take Megan Anderson down and then just start beating her up on the canvas, because Anderson is going to be the bigger fighter, the longer fighter, the more powerful striker, and Zingano is just playing with fire the longer this fight stays standing. So if I'm Zingano, I mean, I immediately shoot a double leg, put Megan Anderson on her back, and then just start beating her up on the canvas, because Zingano has excellent ground and pound. She has okay submission skills. So I think that not only will she win this fight if she takes this fight to the floor, I think that she could actually finish this fight. You know, Megan Anderson has been submitted on the canvas before, and, you know, she's kind of been embarrassed on the canvas against girls that really know what they're doing. So I think Kat Zingano is more than capable of finishing this fight on the ground. It's just, will she get it to the ground? Because Megan Anderson is very, very powerful, and you just do not want to be eating punches against somebody that is that capable of ending fights. I mean, Anderson was somebody, you know, as an Invicta champ, that they were kind of hoping would come to the UFC with a big splash and immediately challenge Cyborg, but that really hasn't happened. She's been exposed on the ground, and I think Zingano exposes her again. So my pick is going to be Kat Zingano. Now, moving on to the preliminary card headliner in the heavyweight division, we have Andre Arlovsky, who is 27-17, taking on Walt Harris, who is 11-7. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Harris open -195, the comeback on Arlovsky +160. And right now, looking over at BetDSI, it's Harris -175, Arlovsky +145. So line did drop a little bit. It tightened up. Two-way action coming into this fight. I know a lot of people probably thought Arlovsky's getting bet, but I know, I mean, for a fact that there's some action coming in on Harris as well. So there is two-way action in this fight. So it's going to be interesting to see where this fight ends up closing at. But that said, I mean, it's an intriguing fight. I mean, to me, it's amazing that in 2018, the UFC is still using Arlovsky as a gatekeeper. I mean, that's exactly the role that he's in. I mean, with his name, what he's accomplished throughout his career, I mean, if you get a solid win over Arlovsky, you're definitely in the mix and on your way maybe towards a title shot eventually, or, you know, you're in the upper tier of heavyweights for sure. So that's exactly the opportunity Harris is getting here against Arlovsky. And it's an opportunity he could definitely take advantage of and get the W over Arlovsky. I mean, on the feet these days, Arlovsky's still always dangerous. He's got knockout power for sure. He's got that IQ of a champion, so he's not a dummy by any means. And he's actually been performing at a way higher level than I thought he would. His chin's actually been holding up in most cases as well. So you got to take your hat off to Arlovsky. I don't know how he's doing it, man, but the guy, he's still relevant in the UFC heavyweight division. Again, that's why the UFC's kind of matching him up the way they have recently as well. Harris has this opportunity. I think he's going to probably take advantage of it and knock Arlovski out. I mean, again, I've said Arlovski's chin been holding up pretty well overall, but against Harris's speed, athleticism, and power on the feet, it's not going to hold up. Harris is definitely, if he has the opportunity to knock Arlovski out, he will. Now, Harris, you got to be cautious though with him as well. He doesn't have the greatest chin in his own right. I mean, if you had to compare chin to chin, I definitely trust Harris's a little bit more in this spot. And at the same time, Arlovski could sneak in a takedown or two. I mean, Harris has been put on his back at times, and Arlovski does have the better ground game. So that would be a concern. If you're going to bet Harris in this spot, I think my biggest fear would probably be, can Arlovski get this fight to the ground and get on top of him and kind of make it a dull, boring type of fight and maybe outpoint him and win on the cards that way, or even possibly finish him on the ground. So that would be my concern with Harris. But I think his takedown defense is probably good enough to keep it upright. And if so, I think he does knock Arlovski out. So in my opinion, it's another spot where, again, the UFC's kind of throwing Harris a bone, saying, hey, come knock out this vet, get in the mix, and, you know, we need some more exciting heavyweights out there, and Harris is definitely that. I mean, he's an exciting heavyweight. He's got knockout power. He loves to stand and bang with people as well. So he comes to fight. So I think that a big win over Arlovski can really do a lot of great things for Harris in his career, and I think he probably gets that win here. So the pick is Harris. And, again, if I was you guys, I would kind of, you know, maybe look around for the knockout prop and see what Harris inside the distance by knockout. Obviously, I don't think Harris is going to sub Arlovski. So it's Harris by knockout, and maybe take advantage of that prop as well. So I think Harris gets the knockout win, and I'm picking him to get the W here.
Yeah, this is definitely that case of up-and-comer against veteran. And, you know, Walt Harris, I think he's ready. Obviously, the fight against Verdum did not go well, but I think that was a super short notice thing that he just stepped up. And Verdum clearly was way better on the ground. And that's really not the case here, where, Arlovski is basically known as a stand-up guy, and, Harris is primarily a stand-up fighter, and we should just see who's the better stand-up fighter at this point in their careers. And, Walt Harris, I think, has the athleticism. I think he's got the power edge. I think that he can mix it up pretty well. Obviously, Andre Arlovski has the experience, and he's been in there against some pretty tough fighters, and he has avoided being knocked out, which is something you have to give him some credit for. You know, I don't think anybody expected him to last all three rounds against Tai Tuivasa, a guy that is just ferociously powerful, and was just winging shots at him. So Arlovski surviving that earns major, major props for me. But I mean, you also have to remember that this guy is now, you know, just about 40 years old. So, you know, his days of being a top contender in the heavyweight division are long behind him. And it really does not take a huge shot to hurt him. I mean, yeah, he's been hurt by some, you know, monster power shots, but he's also just been dropped with just a quick one that he didn't see coming. So, and I think that that's the kind of thing that could happen here. You know, Walt Harris throws good combinations. He has good boxing fundamentals. He mixes it up. He can kick. I think that he just is going to wear Arlovski down. And I think eventually he's going to land something that Arlovski can't defend or doesn't see coming. And I think he puts him away. But as Nick mentioned, you know, with the way Harris was manhandled by Verdum on the ground, you have to be a little bit concerned that Arlovski does use his wrestling here, because Arlovski, while he doesn't have a great ground game, I mean, he has some submissions to his name. He utilized top position to win a decision against Stefan Struve. So, you know, I'm definitely a little nervous about all that, but, for the most part, you know, I'm going to side with the youth here. Arlovski has held off a few younger challengers like Junior Albini, but I think that Walt Harris is at the point in his career where he is ready to take that next step, and this is definitely that next step. So I think that he passes this test, and I think Walt Harris ends up being you know, right on that fringe top 15 heavyweight contenders here after a victory over Andre Arlovski. So my pick is going to be Walt Harris, probably by TKO in the second round. Now, moving on to the pay-per-view main card in the featherweight division, we have Chad Mendes, who is 18-4, taking on Alexander Volkanovski, who is 18-1. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Mendez open -130, the comeback on Volkanovski -110. And right now what you're seeing is Mendez at -145. I'm sorry, the comeback on Volkanovski +115. So a little bit more actually coming in Mendez's way. I mean, let's face it, this is Chad Mendez, man. I mean, this is the guy that was one of the best featherweights in the world for such a long time. And I thought, honestly, even when Jose Aldo was at his run in his prime, I thought that Mendez, skill-wise, was the man to probably challenge and dethrone him. I know that Jose Aldo, again, had, you know, had his number or whatnot, but I mean, I hold Mendez in that regard. And I thought, honestly, he would beat Conor McGregor when they fought as well because of his wrestling, despite the short notice. I thought his wrestling would be good enough to just, you know, get Conor down, manhandle him, and probably finish him on the ground as well. Credit to Conor for, you know, obviously sticking through that tough early start of that fight and then finishing Mendez as he slowed down. But that said, now Mendez has been suspended coming off of, you know, USADA. The suspension that I'm referring to was, you know, USADA related, obviously, as well. So he got the win over Jury in his last fight coming back from that, and he looked great. But the problem is I didn't get to see enough of that fight play out. I mean, he was able to catch, you know, Jury early in that fight and do what he does best and finish him off. But I wanted to see that fight play out a little bit because I wanted to see Mendez in round two, wanted to see Mendez in possibly round three to see what we're seeing with the time off. And then now, like I said, he's got to clean up his act. I mean, if he was obviously, you know, using steroids at one point or whatnot, now, you know, how is he going to perform without? So there's a lot of question marks, in my opinion, you know, that I wanted to see kind of play out in that Jury fight that he just recently had in his return, and it didn't get answered yet. So there's still a lot of question marks, in my opinion, left on the table here. So Volkanovski, on the other hand, I mean, what we've seen from him so far in the UFC has been awesome. I mean, he had a lot of hype coming in, a powerful, just relentless type of fighter, pushes a high pace. I mean, really bullies people in most cases. I mean, he's got knockout power with his hands. He's got a dominant ground game. I mean, there's a lot to like in him. So this is an interesting matchup because you have the momentum Volkanovski has that's actually only getting better, only getting more confidence for him. And I think you can see the improvements in his fights. I mean, he's been nothing but impressive, but Chad Mendez in his prime, I mean, just outclasses Volkanovski, you know, so that's the hard part here because I think Chad Mendez has better wrestling. Chad Mendez is probably the better striker overall. And obviously Chad Mendez is always going to be a knockout threat, and he's got a crazy guillotine where, I mean, once he sinks it in, you're in trouble. You're not going to get out of it as well. So Mendez has a lot of ways to finish. So I'm going back and forth on this fight. It's not an easy fight for me to pick because it's kind of a head scratcher with what we're going to get from Mendez, especially if he's not able to, you know, to get a Volkanovski out of there early in the first round. I mean, as it plays out in round two and round three, still a lot of, like I said, question marks for me. So I'm going to actually go with Volkanovski. I like what I've seen of him lately. I do see the momentum on his side. He's faced solid competition. He's been tested. He's kind of been built up to this spot and to this level here, and he's facing obviously the toughest test of his career in Mendez. But with the question marks I have surrounding Mendez, I don't know. Like I said, maybe early on in this fight, it's going to be close and competitive, but I have a feeling that as the fight progresses a little bit, Volkanovski is going to pull away, whether it's on the scorecards or maybe a late finish against Mendez here as well. I mean, that's kind of how I see this playing out. So I'm going to slightly lean towards Volkanovski. I think it's a dog or pass situation. I certainly would not put my money on Mendez at this point. I mean, no pun intended, but I would not lay the juice. I'd lay the chalk. I mean, like I said, even if you believe that Jury fight was not a fluke, I mean, because that's what Mendez could do. We've seen in the past as well. I'm still not sold on it, so I wouldn't lay it until we see him go out here and perform. Hopefully, like I said, even if Mendez does get the win, I would like to see this play out in a three-round war or a three-round test that's really going to show us what Mendez is about right now. So with all that said, the question marks are just too many for me, so I wouldn't lay it. I would take the dog. It's a dog or pass situation. I'm actually going to pick the dog to win this fight as well. So my pick is Volkanovski to get the by far the best win of his career. And if he's impressive doing so, man, I mean, you could obviously line him up for a title shot. I know that, you know, the featherweight division is obviously fairly stacked, but Volkanovski versus a guy like Holloway, I wouldn't mind seeing that, especially if he's able to defeat a guy like Mendez. So the pick is Volkanovski for me.
And I'm going to come in the other way. I mean, Volkanovski is someone that I have been behind all the way up through his run in the featherweight division through that last victory over Darren Elkins. But this might finally be that test where he finally meets his match. I mean, Chad Mendez is one of the best wrestlers in the featherweight division, so I don't see Volkanovski really getting that part of his game going. And while Volkanovski does push a really high tempo with his hands as well, I mean, he really, you know, just put a beating on Darren Elkins in that last fight. Chad Mendes is a terrific striker with a ridiculous amount of power. So I think, Volkanovski is going to meet his match in terms of striking here. While Volkanovski is going to have some reach advantage, Chad Mendes has that explosive athleticism that will allow him to close the distance and really start cracking back at Volkanovski. And I think that that's just something that he's not used to yet. He's not used to being challenged. I don't think, that Volkanovski's the better wrestler here. I don't think he's the better striker here. The only real thing that Volkanovski has going for him is his chin is almost certainly better than Mendez's. I mean, we've seen Mendes knocked out by Jose Aldo. We've seen him knocked out by Conor McGregor. We've seen him knocked out by Frankie Edgar. So we know that he can be hurt on the feet. And while Volkanovski doesn't have the most power in the world, he could definitely, if he lands some good shots, he could definitely hurt Mendes. And we do know that Mendes has a history of slowing down in fights. Granted, you know, those were more longer fights. And I mean, he did go 5 rounds with Jose Aldo. So it's not like he consistently gasses in fights. But that is something to consider. And if Volkanovski does, mix things up and work over, Mendez's body, and really start to slow him down, that could also factor into this fight. But for the most part, I mean, I was a little concerned how Mendes was going to look after the steroid suspension, coming off a really long layoff, taking on a top dude in the featherweight division in Miles Jury. And Mendes just ate him for lunch and landed a huge shot, hurt Jury, dropped him and finished him. So, you know, you have to assume that Mendes is at least back to the old level that he was, as long as, you know, the conditioning issues, obviously we didn't really get a chance to get those tested, but for everything else, I mean, he looked sharp. So, you know, Volkanovski, as good as he is, as tenacious as he is, as aggressive and voluminous as he is, I just don't think he can keep up with Chad Mendes in the striking department. I think if they're trading big shots, Mendes is going to be landing more consistently. Mendes is going to be landing more powerfully. And Mendes might actually be hurting Volkanovski for the first time in his career. So I'm going to side with Chad Mendes. I really think that this is where Volkanovski kind of reaches, meets his match. So my pick is going to be Chad Mendes. I don't know if he'll get a knockout, but I do think that he does enough to at least win a decision. So Chad Mendes is my pick. Now moving up to the light heavyweight division, we have Aleer Latifi, who is 15-5 with one no contest, taking on Corey Anderson, who is 11-4. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Man, what an awesome fight. I mean, at this point in the light heavyweight division, Latifi versus Anderson is definitely a great scrap. And right now, the opening odds actually were -180 for Latifi and the comeback on Anderson +150. And what you're seeing now over at BetDSI is actually Latifi -140, the comeback on Anderson +110. I mean, these are definitely two of the better light heavyweights as far as what they've accomplished as of late. So I'm glad the UFC matched him. An intriguing matchup as well, because what you have is Latifi, which I think is a little just powerhouse. I mean, he showed it time and time again. I mean, it just hard to take down and just on the feet. It's so tough to deal with. I mean, he's just improved by leaps and bounds in his confidence level. I mean, his training, everything through the years, if you've watched Latifi kind of evolve into what he's become, has been nothing but impressive. So the guy's a true threat. I mean, he's got, like I said, all sorts of knockout power, and he's got great takedown defense to go along with. I mean, just good fight IQ, good conditioning. I mean, he's just a tough, tough out. And Anderson, on the other hand, man, I mean, he's coming off of some very solid wins. I mean, his ability to out-wrestle and just dominate Cummins like he did was kind of impressive. I mean, it was more than impressive. It was surprising how easy he was able to out-wrestle and control Cummins like he did. I mean, I wasn't expecting it to go down like that. And then his win over Teixeira in his last fight was very impressive as well. So Anderson has put himself right in the mix. I mean, he is definitely one of the better wrestlers. He's proven that in the light heavyweight division now. His boxing's nothing to take lightly either. I mean, he's got some technical skill on the feet. He's got a little bit of power behind it. It's just, Anderson's chin, I mean, is definitely suspect at times, and that's what's got him in problems in the past as well. So that's a concern. And for me in this matchup here, it's going to come down to whether Latifi can close that distance and catch that chin of Anderson, or whether Anderson can kind of keep that chin safe and look for some takedowns and possibly be the one to grind Latifi out and control this fight and get the W there. So I could see it kind of going both ways. I mean, like I said, I'm not going to count Anderson out as far as the wrestling goes. Even though Latifi does have outstanding takedown defense, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised at all if Anderson, with his size in this matchup, I mean, he's going to have a tremendous amount of reach as well. I mean, like I said, he can utilize some of that on the feet and possibly have some success, but I don't think he wants to play that game and play with that fire Latifi has. So I think it's going to come down to who could utilize their game plan better. And for me, like I said, I've kind of been going back and forth on this one as well. I'm going to slightly lean towards Latifi because I think his takedown defense probably will hold enough for him to find his spot on the feet and land that punishing blow that's going to probably send Anderson down underground and probably get the win for Latifi. So not a confident pick, obviously, as well, and I wouldn't lay the chalk in this spot. I think it's probably another dog or pass situation because, like I said, if Anderson's chin holds up, I mean, he could definitely win this fight. So not a confident pick, even though I'm going Latifi's way, but I just think that as far as the matchup goes, if Anderson does struggle, Latifi finally does, you know, finds a spot along the way and probably does put him out. So that's why I'm picking Latifi to win, but I wouldn't mind seeing being wrong here and seeing Anderson just kind of continue his role and see how far he can get. So the pick is Latifi, but another head scratcher fight that I think is a great matchup and I'm looking forward to seeing.
Yeah. The main reason I'm siding with Latifi is the fact that his takedown defense in his career is 100%. You know, this guy's been in there against some pretty good wrestlers over the course of his UFC run, and no one has taken him down. He is the stockiest, one of the shortest, stockiest fighters in the division, but, you know, he makes up for that with just insane amount of physical strength and athleticism and explosive power. And, you know, Corey Anderson is going to have a lot of trouble, I think, you know, kind of taking over, and getting Latifi on his back because of he has such a low center of gravity. I think, Aleer Latifi, you know, might be the type of fighter that could be the kryptonite for Anderson. I mean, we know that Anderson, if he does not get a fighter on his back, he can be exposed. We saw John Volante knock him out. We've seen, Manoa knock him out. We've seen him lose decision to, Shogun. So there is absolutely, the possibility of Corey Anderson getting knocked out because, his chin is not very good, but, when he can get fighters on their back, I mean, he is absolutely ferocious. The beatdown he put on Glover was a thing of beauty. And, you can go back and, you know, he's done the same thing to several other current top contenders like Jan Błachowicz. I mean, he tore Błachowicz a new one on the canvas. So, you know, this is definitely a guy that when he does have his wrestling game going is potentially one of the top contenders in the division. And right now I feel like this fight between Latifi and Anderson is the number one contender fight for the light heavyweight division. But the fact that Aleer Latifi has fended off every takedown thrown his way is making me side with him. I think, you know, Corey Anderson, even if he does get Latifi down, isn't going to be able to keep him down. Latifi has a very strong ground game as well. So I think at some point in this fight, Latifi is going to step forward with just an explosive right hand, and he's going to connect on Corey Anderson's chin, and Corey Anderson is going to go down. So my pick is going to be Aleer Latifi, and I think that he wins by TKO at some point in this fight. Now, moving on to the welterweight division, we have Carlos Condit, who is 27-5, taking on Michael Chiesa, who is 14-4. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Chiesa opened -165, the comeback on Condit +135, and right now looking over at BetDSI, it is currently Chiesa at -170, the comeback on Condit +140. So line margins have tightened up. There is two actions coming in this fight. It's been bouncing around a little bit as well. Man, another tough one. Who would have thought Chiesa would honestly be a solid favorite at welterweight over Carlos Condit a few years ago? There's no way you would think that, man. But I'll tell you what, that's just how far Condit has fallen off, and it's a shame. I mean, he's lost, I believe, four in a row over obviously great competition, because I mean, once you make it to the point where Condit did, you're not going to fight any bums. I mean, so, but it's been the ground game that's hindered Condit throughout. I mean, he's always had a great striking game. I mean, he's been one of the best strikers at welterweight, one of the best strikers in the sport that we've seen through the years. I mean, just smooth technique, accuracy, his movement, his defense, everything, timing. I mean, just a thing of beauty watching Carlos Condit do his thing. On the ground, he's no slouch either. I mean, he does have jiu-jitsu. He does have some ability to submit people, but it's just the wrestlers that have been able to get Condit down through the years that have been able to have success. And then, you know, at the same time, if you have some submissions to go along with it, you take his back, you're able to submit him as well. So I think he's just been getting kind of worse. Obviously, the decline is real with these fighters that are getting older, have been around for a long, long time, and MMA years have been beyond that as well. So that's a concern with Carlos Condit. He's fighting a guy in Chiesa that's coming in looking to take this fight to the ground. And once he gets it to the ground, he's going to probably have his way with Condit. So, I mean, that's the issue here. That's why you're seeing Chiesa favored in this spot. Outside of that, though, Chiesa, I mean, like we said, moving up to welterweight, it's going to be interesting to see how he's going to perform in this spot. I mean, he looked, in my opinion, he looked terrible against Pettis. I mean, he got caught in that fight. It happens, but I don't know. It didn't. It wasn't the Chiesa I was expecting to see, I guess, in that spot there as well. I mean, credit to Pettis, but, you know, with the Conor McGregor fiasco or everything that's going on, you know, with the lawsuit that he has going on, I just don't know where Chiesa is at this spot as well. He's talking the talk. He's saying that, you know, the move up to welterweight is going to do him wonders. Now he doesn't have to worry about his weight cutting as much, and, you know, he concentrated on getting himself better. Yeah, I hear it, but, I mean, let's see it go down like that as well. You know, I mean, he's going to definitely, if he's not able to get the fight to the ground in most cases in the welterweight division, and there's some solid wrestlers in this division, as we all know, he's going to be in some deep shit. So, I mean, we'll see if this is the right move from Chiesa here, but make no mistake about it. If Chiesa is able to get the early takedown on Condit, he's going to probably win this fight. So to me, it comes down to, can Chiesa get Condit down early? Can he take his back and probably look for that rear naked choke? Because if he does take Condit's back, I think it's a wrap. But on the other hand, if Condit could sprawl and brawl, if he could stuff those takedown attempts from Chiesa, keep the space, he's going to torch Chiesa on the feet. I know Chiesa has improved, and you can't take him exactly lightly on the feet, but I mean, you can't compare the two on the feet. Condit is still, even at this point of his career, he'll still pick Chiesa apart and have his way with him and probably finish him off on the feet. So I'm pulling for Condit, honestly, in this matchup. Personally, I want to see Condit kind of show back up and, you know, and get a knockout or a flashy, you know, victory again and see him have some life left. But to me, my head's saying that Chiesa probably will get the takedown. And if he does get that takedown, it's probably going to be a wrap and he gets another, you know, submission victory over Condit. Unfortunately for Condit, he suffers another submission loss. So we'll see how it plays out. I mean, I don't really have genuine confidence in either one of these guys because, like I said, there's a lot, I think, that we have to see from Chiesa, especially at welterweight. And there's, like I said, Condit's been a shell of himself as of late as well. He's not the same fighter that we have all, you know, got to know and love throughout the years. So interesting fight, but my head tells me Chiesa's probably going to get the takedown, and one takedown might be enough to get him the win. So I'm going to go with Chiesa by sub.
And that's my problem as well is, you know, Carlos Condit in his prime would probably have torn Michael Chiesa a new one, but he's not in his prime anymore. I mean, he's on a losing streak. He's talked repeatedly about retiring, and I'm just not sure why he's not retired at all. I mean, at his prime, Carlos Condit was in pretty much all of my favorite fights, and that's just not the case anymore. You know, he did not look good against Neil Magny. He looked good for one round against Alex Oliveira, and then he got submitted. And then now he's facing somebody that has a better ground game than Alex Oliveira in Michael Chiesa. Now, Chiesa is moving up in weight, but I don't think that's going to be that big of a problem for him. I mean, he was one of the bigger lightweights on the roster. He's only going to be 1 inch shorter than Condit. He'll have the exact same reach. So in terms of size, he'll be right there with Condit. I mean, yeah, Condit is going to be the better striker, the more powerful striker of the two, but historically, Carlos Condit is not good when he's taken down. He doesn't have good takedown defense, and he doesn't have particularly good submission defense. So my biggest concern here is, yes, Condit's going to get the better of Michael Chiesa on the feet, but when this fight goes to the floor, Michael Chiesa is going to get top position. Michael Chiesa is probably going to take his back. And at some point, Michael Chiesa is probably going to choke Carlos Condit out. I know that Chiesa's, you know, kind of in that whirlwind controversy with his lawsuit against Conor McGregor, and he did have those two losses at the end there against Kevin Lee and Anthony Pettis at lightweight. But I just think that this is a bad matchup here with Carlos Condit's terrible takedown defense and terrible submission defense against somebody that likes to take people down and likes to submit them. So unless Carlos Condit can knock Michael Chiesa out, which I don't think anybody's been able to do so far. I mean, yeah, Chiesa's taken a few shots, but when he loses, it's usually, you know, a decision or on the ground, actually against a superior ground fighter. And Carlos Condit, I just don't think that he can win a decision right now because, he just can start strong and then he's fading. He just is not the same fighter that he used to be. So I'm going to side with Michael Chiesa here. I think he gets the job done. I think the wrestling and submissions are just going to be too much for the former interim champ. Now, moving on to the co-main event of the evening in the women's featherweight division, we have the featherweight champion Chris Cyborg, who is 20-1 with one no contest, taking on Amanda Nunes, who is the women's bantamweight champion and is 16-4. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
My opener was Cyborg -220, the comeback on Nunes +180. Now, I set that line way back in July 13th of earlier this year, of course, so it's been sitting at the books for a while. Now, there's other places that opened a little bit higher. Cyborg was like -280, +200. I believe that's actually in the opening odds reactions piece that Adam Martin writes on our website. That's a line that's quoted there as well. So, you know, it's been kind of a variety of lines, actually, but it was closer to 3-1. I mean, the public immediately betted up at times as well. So I think the market was set close to 3-1. Now, as we're seeing it closer to fight day, obviously it's dropping back down to where I think more realistically where it should be, because this is going to be a competitive fight. This is a true super fight. I'm actually disappointed that it's not getting more pub because, I mean, you have the bantamweight female champion of the UFC that's been dominant, that's been amazing, really. I mean, taking on one of the most dominant fighters, not just women, not just female fighters. I mean, one of the most dominant fighters in the history of the sport, and Christine Cyborg. So, I mean, this is just an outstanding fight. And like I said, these ladies both deserve a lot more credit. Now, how this plays out is interesting because I think stylistically, it's a tough matchup for both. Obviously, Cyborg's used to going out there just dominating her opponents, doing, I mean, just having her way with most of the opponents that she's faced so far. I mean, not many people can take the punishment that they're going to get from Cyborg that she's able to deliver. So, they don't withstand and they don't last. But that being said, I mean, Nunes is another breed in her own right. She can actually absorb some of that punishment. I think she could deliver some of it as well right back. So this is, even though Nunes is a smaller fighter coming into this spot, this is definitely Cyborg's toughest test to date, I think. And Nunes can definitely be more of a challenge than I think most people are thinking in this spot here. I'm expecting this to be another fight that's a war back and forth. I think both these ladies, obviously, like I said, have great technique on the feet. Both have knockout power. Obviously, Cyborg, the bigger, stronger fighter, is going to have a bit of an edge in power. But I think when it comes down to pure technique, it's going to be interesting. I think, obviously, Nunes is a little bit faster. I think Nunes is the better wrestler of the two as well. Now, Cyborg's strength, her natural power, can maybe neutralize some of that as well. But I think when it comes down to takedown defense and the ability to out-wrestle their opponent, I think Nunes has that advantage in this fight. So, this is going to be good. I think, I mean, like I said, I wouldn't be surprised at all. I know Cyborg has been such a dominant champion and just, you know, almost one of these invincible fighters that we put on this pedestal that we don't think is ever going to lose. But man, I think, like I said, stylistically, I think if anybody beats her, it's a fighter like Nunes here. Nunes can strike with her. Nunes, like I said, I think she's a little bit more well-rounded as far as getting the fight to the floor. She's going to have to be careful if she's able to get the takedowns here because it's not going to be easy. And if she is, I mean, Cyborg has shown at times her ability off her back to maybe pose a threat, you know, with jiu-jitsu as well. I don't think Cyborg's going to sub Nunes, but again, just kind of throwing everything out there a little bit. So I think we're going to see just an all-out war, back-and-forth battle. It'll be a competitive fight. And then at some point, I think Nunes is going to be the one that's kind of winning the fight, winning the exchanges, or maybe without pointing Cyborg, like I said, with a takedown attempt or with a little bit of top control on the ground at times. And then a very competitive fight on the feet. So I think the value is clearly on Nunes. I think this is going to be Cyborg's toughest test. I think we all put her on the pedestal a little bit too much. I mean, and we've seen fighters kind of fall off at a point. Now, I haven't seen any signs of decline from Cyborg. I mean, this is one thing you know from Cyborg. Cyborg. I mean, she's been tested in 5-round fights. She has great cardio. She doesn't slow down. I mean, she's able to push a high pace, which Nunes in the past, that was one of her weaknesses as well, was, I mean, as the fight progressed at times, and if it was a tough fight, she did slow down. But as of late, we've seen that cardio, I mean, surprising to me, honestly. I never thought we'd see Nunes have great cardio, but she's shown the ability to actually get better. And you know, I mean, people were kind of throwing it out there like, hey, your cardio is not good enough for 5-rounders or whatnot. Nunes put the work in. She got herself to the point where, I mean, her cardio is definitely improved. So if this is a 5-round fight, I still think Cyborg is going to be the better of the two as far as cardio goes. But I think Nunes can hang in there and you know, like I said, I'll point Cyborg along the way and possibly steal this win on the scorecards. If we're going to see a finish, I mean, both these ladies, let's not forget, most people think it'll be Cyborg that finishes Nunes, but I could see Nunes possibly finishing Cyborg, whether it's maybe clipping her on the feet, catching her on the ground with something as well. I mean, it could happen. So I think there's more ways to win this fight for Nunes. I think the value, like I said, is on Nunes at the dog price as well. And I'm going to pick her to win this fight and pull off the upset. So Nunes is going to actually become the featherweight champion, in my opinion. So she's going to be a multiple division champion in the UFC as well. I mean, we'll see how it plays out, but I think there's a good chance it happens. Now, of course, Cyborg, if she gets the job done, I mean, it's unfortunate for her that she's not going to be able to wear the two straps. I mean, obviously, because this is a featherweight, but man, I tell you what, still, even without the bantamweight belt on her waist, I mean, if she wins, if she beats Nunes, then Cyborg's going to definitely go down probably as the best female fighter in the history of the sport. Not that, I mean, you can argue that already, but I think a win over Nunes kind of solidifies that even more so. So awesome fight. Again, flying under the radar. Both these ladies deserve the attention and more attention than they're getting right now, deserve kind of the headlining spot in my opinion. And it's an awesome fight I'm looking forward to. And I think there is value to be had with Nunes. So the pick is Nunes and hopefully she's the new featherweight UFC champion when it's all said and done.
And I have to side with Amanda Nunes as well. I mean, I know Chris Cyborg has this aura of invincibility, but she has some lack in technique that she overcompensates with incredible physical strength and power. And I think Amanda Nunes actually is going to be able to utilize that technique that she possesses to finally allow Cyborg to really meet her match. Nunes is very powerful as well with her stand-up, and I just think that she mixes things up well enough that she'll be able to get in Cyborg's face and land some big shots. You know, I know that Cyborg can bring the pain, so Nunes, I think defensively, is going to be the better fighter as well. I mean, we have seen Cyborg historically just take on overmatched opponent after overmatched opponent after overmatched opponent. And while Amanda Nunes is the 135-pound champ, you know, she's fought at 145 before. It's not her weight class, and, you know, Cyborg could never fight at 135, but Nunes definitely has the speed and power that I think can translate to 145. And, you know, we saw when Holly Holm took on Cyborg that, you know, a good technique can make a fight really interesting. And what you have with Amanda Nunes is you have excellent technique and then you combine it with huge power. We could see Cyborg not just tested. We could see Cyborg like literally on the ropes at some point. I mean, we've never really seen her eat a huge shot from a big power striker before. So, I think this is just a fascinating, fascinating contest and I'm looking forward to it so much. Amanda Nunes has improved her ground game a lot, but that's also where she has lost pretty much all of her fights. I mean, so I think I'm definitely concerned about if Cyborg does take this fight to the ground and get top position because, Nunes, you know, lost on the ground to Kat Zingano. She lost on the ground to Alexis Davis. So, you know, those are all real possibilities. You know, Cyborg has the power to stop anybody at any moment. So maybe Amanda Nunes gets confident after she lands a few shots and drops her guard a little bit. Cyborg could land anything at any moment and turn the tide of this fight. And that's not to say that she won't be, you know, headhunting from the beginning. And, I'm just really excited about this fight. I think Nick is completely right in that, people are underestimating this fight massively. And I think, you know, you're going to have two of the best female fighters in the world, two of the most dangerous and powerful female fighters in the world in the cage at the same time. And this is not just like a battle of champions like, Shevchenko against Young Jacek, where, you know, they'd fought each other before and Shevchenko just was clearly better for the most part. I think this time around, you're going to have somebody that whose power is going to translate moving up with Amanda Nunes, and we could see somebody, you know, legitimately get knocked out hard. So I'm really excited about this fight. I think it's going to live up to all the expectations, and I'm siding with Nick. I think Amanda Nunes gets the job done. I think that her speed and technique are going to overcome Chris Cyborg's brute power and just incredible tenacity. Now, this brings us to the main event of the evening in the light heavyweight division as John Jones, who is 23-1, returns to the octagon to take on Alexander Gustafsson, who is 18-4, in a rematch. And the winner will become the new UFC light heavyweight champion. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Again, according to our UFC 232 opening odds reactions, Jones minus 190, Gustafsson at plus 150. That was the opening line across the market. Right now, what you're seeing is BetDSI having Jones minus 285, comeback on Gustafsson at plus 220, or 230 rather, sorry. So minus 285, plus 230. So line margins have tightened up, more action coming in John Jones' way. Not a surprise at all in that regard, because obviously John Jones just one of the most popular fighters in the history of the sport. I mean, it's just a shame that we haven't been able to see, you know, the consistency in the fights that we want to see with John Jones kind of play out. I mean, it's just a shame that he's kind of been in his own way and all the problems that he's had. I'm not going to touch on a lot of that stuff, obviously. I mean, it's been said, it's been reported, it's all over the place. I mean, even this time with the event getting moved to Los Angeles from Vegas or whatnot. I mean, that's a shame as well. So I'm not sure. I'm not going to, you know, speculate whatever. I don't know if he's innocent, guilty. I mean, obviously all of us will have our opinions on it, but it's just a shame because I think John Jones, obviously with the skill set that he has, I mean, and just the athleticism and his physical attributes, I mean, he could definitely be the greatest of all time in the sport, but I don't know. I think his legacy is definitely tarnished. And I mean, with the, just his inability to keep in the cage. I mean, he's with his suspensions and fighting basically like once a year. It's not good. Not a good thing at all. We want to see more of John Jones. We want to see him fight at least a couple times. I mean, he's just a special talent, a special athlete that we've, you know, all come to love watching him compete at the highest ability. And Gustafsson brings the best out of him. We've seen that in the first matchup. I mean, these guys went at it. And Gustafsson, you can say a lot of the same things about him as well. I mean, he's been fighting inconsistent as well. I mean, he's been hurt. He's been, you know, out for some time as well. So I think both of these guys, it's a shame. I mean, these are two of the best light heavyweights we've ever seen in the sport, and they've just haven't been in the cage as often as we like to see them. So, I mean, just that alone, the factor, there's going to be some cage rust. There's no doubt about it. Now, Gustafsson, you know, he's had these layoffs in the past and he's come in and he's performed relatively well, despite that. And with John Jones, I mean, you know, with those layoffs and then coming back in the OSP fight, I think he was a little flat in that fight. Obviously in the last fight with coming back and fighting Daniel Cormier as well. I think Cormier was obviously winning that fight. You know, in my opinion, he was winning that fight before he got caught. So John Jones hasn't looked the greatest. I mean, we haven't seen the John Jones that was just going out there, just dominating his opponents. And, you know, a lot of that might be due to some ring rust or whatnot, or cage rust. And I mean, he's going to be in the same predicament again. I mean, both these guys, I think, are going to have, like I said, some cage rust because of their time off, but it should be an exciting fight. It should be a close fight as well. And I just hope we see a classic battle. I hope we see these guys, I mean, coming in, you know, in top notch, you know, shape, and we see another all out 5-round war that's very competitive. That's what we all want to see. Let's face it. I mean, we want to see a repeat performance of their first battle. One of the greatest fights we've ever seen, not just in light heavyweight, in the sport's history. I mean, that was a battle. It was classic. So if we could see anything remotely close to that, I mean, whew, that'll make our night for sure. It'd be well worth the pay-per-view buys. No doubt about that. But as far as the betting aspect of things go, I would not lay the chalk on John Jones. I mean, there's just, again, we were talking about question marks in the other fights. There's just too many question marks in this spot as well. And we know, like I said, in my opinion, unless Jones goes out there and just floors Gustafsson early on, I mean, I think this will be a classic battle, and I think both these guys can hurt each other. And I think both of these guys, I mean, at this point, you just can't trust their durability that much either. So, and it's not like John Jones. I mean, he's more than capable of finishing fights. Don't get me wrong. He's done it time and time again. I mean, he's just an outstanding finisher. And the unorthodox way he goes about finishing some of these fights, it's not going to be just a one punch knockout though with John Jones. I mean, it's going to be something different. It's a, like I said, he's a unique type of fighter. So, I mean, that's the thing here. He's not going to go out there and just floor Gustafson with one punch. I mean, it could be a kick though. Could be a knee, could be an elbow. I mean, something along those lines. And then, you know, he jumps on a sub or something like that. But I think it'll be a back and forth war. I think Gustafson's definitely going to have his moments. I mean, Gustafson was able to even have success in the wrestling aspect of things in their first fight as well. So I think to me, it's a dog or pass situation. I mean, at the current price, because again, I think both of these guys are going to have some rust. I think both of these guys are going to be kind of respecting each other, feeling each other out for a little while as well. And I mean, it'll go back and forth. And then once they start loosening up, we'll see some fireworks, I think, happen as well. So I do think John Jones wins this fight. I mean, again, he's one of the best fighters I've seen, obviously, in the sport's history. And I think, I mean, it is what it is. He's a great fighter. He's just in his own way. It's a shame. I mean, we'll see if he can keep himself, you know, if he does win this strap back and he can keep himself clean and out of trouble. And see what he can perform. Because, I mean, I tell you what, there's a long road ahead of John Jones, and he could accomplish a lot and get himself back on track and get himself back on that pedestal we all had him on. I mean, just imagine he wins this fight here, and then he does face Daniel Cormier again and is able to defeat Daniel Cormier even for that heavyweight title or whatnot, then fight some heavyweight matchups. I mean, there's just – the sky's the limit for what John Jones can do in the next few years if he's able to keep himself clean and on the right track. I mean, we all want to see it. So I don't have the confidence in him, and I don't have the confidence in him. And even in this spot here, that I think he's just going to blow out Gustafson like most people think he's going to do here. So I'm going to pick John Jones again. It's hard to pick against him. I mean, the guy's one of the greatest fighters, like I said, I've ever seen. But with that being said, there's no way I could lay 3-1 chalk in this spot. I think it's a dog or pass situation. So it is what it is. As I mentioned earlier, I'm going to pick John Jones to win. But for me, it's hard to bet this fight because I don't really trust either one of these guys at this point.
And I'm going to side with John Jones as well. I mean, how can you not? The guy is the greatest fighter in the history of the planet. When he's active and actually competing, he's able to do things that just about no one else in the world has been able to do. He beats people at their own game. And, you know, John Jones fought Alexander Gustafsson before. And yes, it was one of the best fights in UFC history, but not for the reason that people like to say. It's because, you know, John Jones was better than Alexander Gustafsson, and he thought so, and he believed it, and he didn't train. So he took a beating in that fight and had to really find himself and win the last two rounds to ensure that he retained the belt. And I think that was a huge, huge learning experience for John Jones. And he was embarrassed that fight was so close. And I think this time around, he is going to be insanely motivated to prove that the fact that the last time these competed was a fluke, that the reason it was close, I think he wants to make a statement with this fight. You know, Alexander Gustafsson, as talented as he is, and he does have similar measurables to John Jones, but he's not the wrestler John Jones is. He doesn't have, quite the reach and ability that John Jones has. I would say that he does have a little bit more pure punching power, but, you know, he doesn't have the ability to mix up the rest of his skills with his elbows and knees and kicks the way John Jones can. He doesn't have the submissions John Jones has. You know, I think just at whatever point, John Jones will at some point take this fight over and win. Yeah, there's all the controversy with them moving the event from Las Vegas to LA. There's all the controversy with John Jones' past, with all the terrible things that he's done over the course of his career. But you also have to factor in that, doesn't matter, because John Jones has come through and won every fight he's ever been in. I mean, the only loss on his record is a disqualification because he was beating a guy too hard. End up dropping some illegal elbows. Against Alexander Gustafsson, I think, my main issue here beyond anything is, you know, anybody even saying that John Jones is going to be rusty because of his suspension. Alexander Gustafsson has been out longer than John Jones has, and he has no excuse. He wasn't suspended. He just didn't fight for about a year, and then he got finally booked to fate Volkan Ozdemir, and then he got hurt. So and that didn't happen. So he has not been healthy. He had a hamstring injury earlier this year, and I just think that he's going to be rustier than Jones. He doesn't have as good of a chin as John Jones, and I think even though Jones doesn't have insane one-punch knockout power, if Jones connects with a knee or a head kick like he did against Cormier, or a nasty elbow like he rocked Gustafsson with in their fight in the later rounds, then I think John Jones will be able to not just beat Gustafsson, but I think finish Gustafsson this time around. Because, again, I think he's out for blood and he wants to make a statement. So my pick is going to be John Jones, and I think that he wins in an absolutely violent and efficient, as most violent and efficient manner as possible. So that'll do it for our full event breakdown for UFC 232. If we have a free play to give out, make sure to follow at MMAOBPremium on Twitter, because that's where we'll post them first. We can also notify you of our free bets via email alert if you prefer that method. Just send an email to picks@MMAOddsBreaker.com and we'll add you to our free bet mailing list. Special thanks to BetDSI. Good luck, everyone, and hopefully the betting gods are on your side this weekend.